I would think there would, over a long period of time, there'd be a tendency to vest quicker in the PERS, so that you might have a larger percentage of the group wanting to move towards PERS because the vesting is lower. But it may not hold true, because then it may be based on occupation and, you know, longevity in service. Their teachers traditionally teach longer. Public employees traditionally work shorter periods of time. So there may be a tendency to have the vesting in the teachers and bring over a couple years, 6 months, 2 weeks, or whatever it is, into the teachers. And I'm just trying to think of all the combinations of what would affect it, and I really don't have any feel in that area other than just what I said now.
Paul, the only people that would be allowed to administrative would already be vested. Only vested employees.
Right, I'm saying the term vesting would define that.
Definition for the two systems, though.
Okay, what I'm saying is, Frank's question was, which way would they tend to move?
I know.
I think the term, wherever they're vested, is going to have them, they're going to say, well, I'm not vested over there, I can't move that way, so I've got to move this way. That's the first way I initially look at it. If I had a system where they're both sides are vested,
then I'd choose a system where
I got the greater benefit, however calculated.
Which would probably or usually be the system that you were in last.
Right.
So I think both of those indicate, you know, cross current. Kind of a toss up.
I wonder though on this bill if a way for us to go would be, say, to maybe have something like, let's just suggest this, a no recognition on the bill, but to say in order to accomplish this, it's better done by this method.
Is this a bilateral?
Because it seems like we're talking about, we kind of agree that there should be, you know, some kind of equality of service in either system, but that this doesn't exactly do it.
I think, you know, unless you had an equal weighting of the movement, and weak weighting not necessarily by numbers, but by benefit paid out, that one system or the other system is going to benefit or take the brunt of it. Mm-hmm. Because of that, that's one of the reasons for 284.
I think they both will.
Well, if you could choose which way you were going, you would always choose to the higher of the two systems and let that particular system you choose bear the brunt of your benefit. That's 634.
Right.
Under 284, you can still choose, but the way it's structured, the particular system that you perform the service in will be paying for that service. So you're not picking up the cost of the service that was performed under the other system. However,
and you're not bringing old service
into the newer system. Yeah,
up to current salary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the provision that I have difficulty with. If you had 5 years of service at a higher rate, then you might bring in 10 years at a lower rate, but have credit for 15 years at the higher rate.
Because it's based on the last three years.
That's
right. And I think both systems would be impacted, by virtue of that. Whichever vested teachers had some public employee service would take it out of the public system, put it over there so it could be computed at their higher salary. Even if that liability were, you know, through some complicated bookkeeping mechanism were taken off of PERS books and moved over to the teachers, what went on to the teachers would be a considerably greater liability than came off of the public employees books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of the difference in monthly compensation, not because of a difference in the formula. And that flow would probably go both ways.
Is there only one difference then, basically, between the two?
I think the fact that, well, a couple, the basic differences as I see them, one is that wherever the system, under 284, wherever that service is performed, that system bears the cost of it. So you don't have this movement of liability between two trust funds. And I don't even want to begin to start thinking of those ramifications of what you do when you say, well, it's time to transfer funds. How do you account for it? That's one difference. The other difference is, second difference is that under 284, that once you're vested, you come under the regular benefit, the normal retirement, the early retirement. So whether you have 5 years under PERS, or whether you have 8 years under TERS, or 5 years with 15 or 20 years, or all the various ways that you can vest under the TERS, once you're vested under 284, you're going to get a benefit from that system. And under 634, you have options to start saying which one I'm going to go to draw the benefit from.
What about the time length here? It mentions 55 years of age in 284. And I don't recall that said anything about 10.
At 284, you can be doing one of two things. You can either draw a normal retirement benefit or an early retirement benefit. At 634, doesn't really address it. It just says the elderly would receive increased benefits. So I guess what they're saying is that when you finally retire under that second, or under the system that you do when you bring that service in, that age would define what you would draw. What I'm trying to say is it is quite possible for a person to be drawing, here's another consideration that we discussed, is what happens if you got an employee today who has 5 years, who's vested under both systems today? Is it, what happens if a person wants to retire? Can they retire under one system and not retire under the other system? Yes, you can. Okay. If under the conditional service bill 284, you had a person who was drawing a conditional benefit for like 2 years service under PERS and was retired under teachers, is that possible? Yes. Is it still possible then for that person to go back to work under PERS, stop the benefit there, and still be drawing the teacher benefit? Yes. Okay. Under 634, if you brought that service all over and the person went to work in the other system, since you already brought the pieces over, let's say you brought some of PERS into TERS, you'd be drawing this larger benefit in TERS based on the PERS system. Then if you went over in the PERS and started to work, there's no condition to say stop the benefit that you're drawing in the teachers based on the PERS system. Now if you truck that even a little further, what happens when the guy gets enough time in the PERS system to vest if he had his other piece that he took over into the TERS and he said, now wait a minute, I'd like to have my benefit recalculated because I'm now vested under the PERS because I do have 5 years. Again, if you count the two that I took over to TERS.
Chain it up again.
It just got going like this, and I'm just kind of going through how we got to a conditional service bill, and this is all sort of coming back to me as I work on it here. But that was a problem. So we said, well, if you got that kind of problem, and if you keep the two separate and you just develop the benefit around the normal and early retirement type benefit based on the particular system, you avoid all these crossover problems. And that's why it's like this.
Yeah. Well, can we recommend that we indicate after study of both House Bill 634 and House Bill number 284, we felt that the purposes for which these bills were designed were better met in House Bill number 284. I don't know if everybody agrees on that version, but...
You want to put that as a motion?
Okay, I would move that, I need to repeat that again, that after studying House Bills number 634 and 284, the committee determined that the purposes for which the bills were designed was best met by House Bill number 284. I think that's essentially what I said the first time.
Are there any objections to that?
We'll have to second it before we can.
Well, I was trying to get around that.
Go ahead. Is there a second then that we can take it for?
I second that.
Okay, discussion.
I'm not hard up momentarily. I couldn't recall. Just before lunch, we had a vote for which we had no motion. And so momentarily, on the procedural basis, I'm not quite sure why we have to have
a
motion.
I made a motion because this was a different type of situation. Mm-hmm. Normally, we've been dealing with one bill, but in this particular circumstance, we've been comparing bills, and I thought it required a new motion because it was a departure from the process or procedure.
This is not the recommendation, but merely some language that will accompany.
Oh. I mean, we're not voting on one bill or the other.
Well,
does the board subscribe to that statement?
And are we going to have any other major motion to vote on in regards to these two bills?
Well, I would think so.
If we had a vote on 634 and say it was to not pass, recommendation it was do not pass, then this would be the reason for that recommendation. But actually we have the reason before we have the vote in a sense.
Unless Stan, perhaps
unless we don't
you're
take
saying you're opposed to both of the bills, then I can see why. No.
Unless we don't take a position on the bill itself, as we've been doing before, and just say that, just make this our comment on the bill. Say there's not a, well, actually we have two reasons. We don't have a fiscal note. We don't have any idea of the fiscal impact of
the
bill.
We have it on 284.
It's like the other, that I think it's going to be really, really hard to come up with it. With a good fiscal note on this. I mean, there's so many unknowns that Lord, you know, but I think it is possible to say that it's significant.
The reason I made this particular motion was that from the features I've heard, I think 284 sounds better, and I couldn't see that we needed to do action on one and reject it because Representative Parr's committee might think, well, we were just throwing this out.
Right.
But tying the two together indicates that we're really still interested in the features of it.
You can't pass them both.
No, I realize that. I think my explanation takes care of it.
So we're on our recommendation, if we go on House Bill 634, could be that we have no recommendation at this time because there's no fiscal analysis available, but that the board feels that the provisions of 634, the intent of 634 is better handled by 284.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of we would keep from really making a do pass or do not pass on this bill, because I sort of feel we don't have enough information.
I like
to
what
do
you've
it.
Suggested here.
And that's kind of a departure in a way from just saying yes or no on bills.
We don't have the fiscal implications.
But I don't see how we can do any different.
We could preface our decision sort of along the lines that, you know, voting on a particular bill with the understanding that is recognized and that the opposite bill is supported by the board, or voting on the bill with the understanding that the opposite bill is not supported by the board, such that if you were to read House Bill 264, the recommendation would be 6 do not pass, with the understanding that the board supports the concept as concept of the bill, but better defined under HB 284. Then when you go over to 284, you hear just the opposite. Pass with the understanding that the board does not support the concept, but not as defined in the opposite bill. Because I think, you know, if what happens many times is you get a bill and somebody just like this got in the, you know, drafted, they didn't realize that 284 was around.
Sure.
They recognize that that there's another one around doing what they think we want to do with it.
I feel that that's our kind of our role too, is to take into account those things, you know, and look at a bigger picture than they look at it just with one bill. I really do.
So now we in a discussion stage on the motion.
Right.
Well, I would feel more comfortable voting on them separately. So at this point, unless something comes up here, I'd be inclined to vote no, just for that reason. We've been doing that. We have, you know, voting on each one separately, I think.
Stan, if I were to withdraw my motion with my second's approval, would you support the idea that, which I think accomplishes the same thing, that Paul has suggested, where we act on one with a cross-reference to the other?
And I would be inclined to support a no recommendation in regards to 634. And looking forward to 284, I would be inclined to favor, do recommend, or whatever we're using along that line, and in both or either case, making reference back to the other one, if that isn't repetitive.
How does this language sound? The board feels that after study of House Bill 634 and House Bill 284, the question of portability of retirement credit is better served by House Bill 284.
But I think this is what Stan objects to, because that's essentially what I said.
We can't get out, or we can't get in?
I'm not going to withdraw my motion then. I think I'll leave it on the floor.
I said, Judge, you know, we have to deal with the worship.
We're done for.
There you go.
Can't get out.
You couldn't get out. You couldn't get in. It's good news, but not for me.
This one's supposed to be dead. Thank you.
Sign right here.
they're a quick.
Apply to retirement system.
Well, the Bahama Fund or something.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Data which would permit an accurate fiscal analysis is not available at present. However, the fiscal impact is estimated to be significant. I don't understand what the alternative was to that.
What was that comment on 364?
The board feels that after study of House Bill 634 and 284, the question of portability of retirement credit is better served by House Bill 284.
I can't see why that doesn't serve the purpose if it has for both of the this bit 264 at this time, which were or 624.
634.
And then if we want to, when we deal with the other one.
And then the second part says...
Says data which would permit an accurate fiscal analysis is not available at present. However,
for either bill.
No, there's one available under 284.
Oh, there is one?
Yes.
So this is talking about this bill. However, the fiscal impact of this bill, 634, is estimated to be significant.
Can we get an idea of the fiscal impact of 284? And does that give us any kind of a generality on 634?
No. It doesn't, because there's several things that happen. One, 284, I know which people they are because I matched the two systems up. Mm-hmm. And I know what kind of service they have, and there's 56 employees. So based on their years of service that they have, it was basically a minimal impact. Okay, it was the lowest rate we could give it. Okay. Under 634, there's the same people primarily, but the thing that you don't have defined is you don't have defined their salary. You don't have defined which system they'll choose to get all their benefit from. And that's,
I think it's clear though that 634 would be more.
It's got to be more, absolutely.
Okay.
More expensive.
Cost-wise.
Administratively wise, in 634, unless there was some real massive amendments to that just to handle it, there'd be some bucks there too.
I call for the question.
What we have before us, Dan, and I'll read it this time. is this, we're voting on this more or less comment, I suppose, on House Bill 634, that the board feels that after study of House Bill 634 and House Bill 284, the question of portability of retirement credit is better served by House Bill 284, period. Data which would permit an accurate fiscal analysis is not available at present. However, the fiscal impact is estimated to be significant.
I prefer to use the word transferability. Or portability.
The term has been thrown on as reciprocity is one. Transferability on one, and the other one.
Transferability is maybe a little more.
The bill speaks to transferability.
I think,
but the reciprocity is an overall concept.
In a sense, we're not voting yes or no on the bill.
Not
I think a point of clarification is that fiscal note be substantial should be only on the statement that applies, that's going to go on the House Bill 634, so that they don't construe it to mean that 284 doesn't have one done already.
Mm-hmm. But are we going to have any other vote on 634?
Presumably you would
vote. And we're not
to
going to have
or not recommend.
We're not going to have an option for saying do recommend, do not recommend, or no recommend.
I would think that you would have such a vote following that.
Yeah. And then this would be incorporated into the reasons for our vote.
What's that?
This would be incorporated into the reasons for our vote. So we're
It's just whether or not this
now,
is
true.
Okay,
but I'm saying we're establishing a precedent here. We're beginning now to vote on whether to add our reasons. And we hadn't done that before.
Yeah, we've always had a reason on all the bills.
Yeah, but we hadn't voted on the reasons.
Yeah, but we haven't ever voted.
whether
or not you were going to vote. This vote is just whether or not the
whether we agree with
board,
that statement.
Whether that statement is accurate and representative of the board's feelings.
Yeah, I'd suggest that we vote on this statement as it is, and then we vote on the bill.
On 634.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are there any objections to this statement?
No.
Then it's unanimously agreed with the statement. Now we can get down to vote on House Bill 634. With the three possibilities again of do pass, do not pass, and no recommendation.
And this doesn't require a motion to move into that then. And so that being the case, there's no structured way that we could say that we want to come out with a no recommendation on behalf of all of us.
Well,
if we all vote
no recommendation.
Right.
I guess my feeling on this, and because we're doing this a little bit different, this is probably discussion preparatory to voting, is that a no recommendation vote is, I'm in favor of at the moment because of lack of information on the bill. Although in philosophy, I feel a 284 better achieved. I can't actually vote on the fiscal part because I don't know what it is. So that kind of tempers my yes or no vote to really a no recommendation vote.
Well, could we address HB 634 like we have in the past fiscally? No recommendation because there's no data available. And then 634 concept of the bill, and that's what we really have been voting on the past, mm-hmm. really the concept of the bill.
So I'd be inclined there to go with a do not recommend, because I don't agree with the rationale of it, particularly as I regard it in comparison with 284. I feel it's inept for me to say I have no recommendation when I criticize it.
I made the motion with the explanation because I felt 284 was better, and therefore I guess I'd be voting against the bill. I wouldn't vote against it without an explanation, but the explanation served to be my reason for opposing this bill.
I think my input would be to that is I would vote against 634 in lieu of 284, if that's understood. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would vote for 634 with the understanding some massive changes are made to the bill, which makes it look like 284.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my vote. So if I were voting, I'd say do not pass on 634 with the statement 284 does a better job. And then when I got to 284,
yeah.
I would just, I'd say I pass it.
We have,
and that's my thinking, and you know, however we want to phrase it, but that's the way where I'm coming from. Conceptually, I support the concept of both bills.
Mm-hmm.
But taken together, I reject one and I accept the other. I think our statement does that. Now it's a case of just saying we don't want this one, we want this one. Or we want this one, but we don't really know how we feel about the other one. It's what's happening, I think, if you say I no recommendation is...
Okay, let's go.
Okay. Are we ready for the question then?
I think so.
Okay. Okay, House Bill 634. And we'll vote do pass, do not pass, or no recommendation. Jerry?
Well, I'd have to say that do not pass under the precept of what we've talked about. Of course, I understand that the caution of things is going to be put to it with it, an explanation of why the action was taken. Voting strictly on 635, I'd have to say do not pass.
And Stan?
Do not pass, and to paraphrase what you're saying, in comparison with, but I do not like the element of responsibility and accountability as you follow through with the qualifying of service from one to the other, and it's much covering a much more responsible and accountable fashion under 284.
Mike,
do not pass.
Do not pass for the reasons previously cited.
Do not pass for the same reasons.
Chairman, votes do not pass.
Fourth and whatever reasons we got.
So our reason being the vote will go in as 6-0 and with the explanation that we've already agreed upon.
Right.
Does that take care of that one?
Seems to.
Next one.
Okay, House Bill 635 is now up.
At this time, we want to vote on 284.
Well, if we do, we kind of take it out of turn, in a sense. But if it's the board's pleasure to take it up at this time, we don't actually have to make any kind of decision on 284 until our next meeting. But we can take it out of the pending, although that would be an exception to what we're doing.
I think they're so interrelated that if we're going to, you know, give the legislature something now, basically this, that if we said, that the other part of that is say, okay, well, what is your recommendation on 284? And our recommendation was to pass, or to pass, but we wanted to change two things on it. That kind of idea. They may be looking for the action on 284 in conjunction with 634. That's why I say if our discussion is darn near concluded, other than taking a vote, we might be able to get 284 all the way right now.
What does the other members of the board feel about taking up House Bill 284 at this point?
I feel since we referred to it, it probably would be well.
Okay, it appears to me that the costs are minimal. For either purse or TR, it's running respectively $20,000 per annum and $25,000 per annum. Was there any other features? See, we really haven't dug into 284 momentarily. It seemed to me that there were recommendations for amending this only for language, for precise words, like using word benefit instead of pension. Those were amendments or revisions of it. But technically, Paul, do you recall of any further homework that was currently needed for that?
Well, if there are no objections, then we'll take up House Bill 284 at this time. Just to make it formal.
No, I think the only thing that I'm aware of is just a little bit of cosmetics as particular words like retirement salary. I think there's a couple words in here that we're trying to get out, try to make some kind of consistency in all our retirement systems. But that the effect of the bill is, as stands, is modifications to they're cosmetic things is all I'm trying to say.
Well,
the substance of the bill is still there.
Now the conditional requirements or elements are those inconsistent with a previous consideration, like 55 years of age, and this says they must have at least 2 years. They can't qualify 1 year only. It has to be at least a minimum of two. Is there any reason to think that it should have been one instead of two? Of course, we're not writing the bill, are we? Oh, and it's age 50. Okay. And the percentage is the same, 2%. Retroactive payments are required. And we're convinced that it does. In other words, if it's 2 years of purse you're trying to qualify, then it's held accountable towards that fund. Okay. Uh,
Does House Bill 284, is it significantly different from 634 in the retirement age?
No, because I think under 634, an individual can choose early retirement. Under 284, you can also choose early retirement. I think the only difference would be if you could have a situation where an individual would choose early retirement under one system and continue to work under the other system and then retire, whereas under 634, that one system is defining the benefit, defining when you're going to draw a benefit exclusively.
Ken? One difference, I think, maybe, is that under 634, the credit which you transferred from one system to the other could be used to satisfy the service credit for normal retirement. In other words, if a person had, say, 15 years in each system, then and he moved his 15 years from the TRS system into the PERS system, he would then be eligible for normal retirement with his 30-year service, even though he might only be 50 years old. This way, the credit which you may claim in the short system, referring to it that way, a couple of years or so, would not put you any closer to retirement than you already were.
Under 634, I'm not sure whether that's possible or not.
I'm not either.
Under 284, I know it is not possible.
It's not possible to add the number of years of the two systems.
But you couldn't bring the two together and say, I've got 18 years under the teachers, 2 years under the PERS, so therefore I've got 20 years, therefore I'm going to take 20 years now under the teachers. That precludes that, because you have to here be at the ages of 50. You have to be at least age 50, which makes you eligible for early retirement.
But in 634, you could have done that.
I'm not sure. Oh. I don't know whether there's anything here that says it doesn't satisfy
the only thing it provides for is that you can't take the credit twice. You can take it in both systems, but I think there's nothing that disallows using it to satisfy requirements like that. Although it might be needed.
On the bottom of page
well,
two.
Well, that's D on the 634, I believe. So the credit of service granted under this section will not be used to satisfy the credit of service requirements for normal retirement. So it is
34. You cannot claim.
So that the bills are alike.
Okay. I was trying to, I was just thinking that that would certainly be an advantage in retirement. And if the, I'm thinking what's wrong, I'm trying to find out what's wrong with that thinking. If you work 20 years for the state, 10 of them in PERS and 10 of them in teachers, why wouldn't that be 20 years for the state of Ohio? And subject to retirement.
I guess it's a moot point here, in as much as they don't want to get it.
I guess I'm maybe off the track, but I'm wondering, maybe that, I think that if you work 20 years for the state, no matter which system you're in, it all counts towards your time.
I think it has been a practice of legislation, anything that you like, former territories, all these type of things that you don't want. And they don't normally, I don't think they need to, but they use that to can, you can add it on, you benefit a few years, but you can't use it to satisfy early retirement.
I suspect so you could open the floodgate for then trying to credit outside service and clerks and many other things.
Well, I don't.
But I sense that that's not done at all in any system.
Well, I
don't know why.
Well, under this, I think this is the first time, at least that I've been, that something like this has been proposed, and the person could have, like you say, satisfied their 20 years state retirement and just in two different systems and have contributed to both systems, but not be eligible in the past under accrediting military service or territorial service and a lot of these things were, some of them were free and some of them weren't.
Well,
and so they just did use it to satisfy a plan. They let you add it on to your number of years, but you couldn't use it to make you eligible for early
The way it's set up now is to try to maintain the 50-year requirement as a retirement rather than the number of years served. Because
well,
the number of years served could allow you to, say, retire at 40 or less.
I don't know. Again, the way it is now, it's normal retirement is after 30 years of service, regardless of age, you could be, or age 50 years of retirement, normal retirement at 55.
So for 30 years, what could you add to get 30 years? How do you get 30 years?
Oh, you can't accrue more than 30 years service. You know, if you start with the state when you're 17 or 30 years, you're out with no penalty, no reduction in benefit for you at 47.
Okay, but can you, how do you add up the 30 years all within one system?
Yes, presently.
Yeah, I think this is, I think it was brought up when this bill was put together. And the problem we were getting into is the possibility when that a teacher who has, let's use a teacher or a policeman who has 20 year an hour, and they're eligible for a retirement benefit. If you're eligible for a retirement benefit, you don't state age 50 for the conditional benefit in the other system. The teacher could be as young as 41, 42, 43, somewhere in there, drawing their 20-year-and-out benefit, at the same time drawing a conditional service benefit under the PERS system. And looking at that, felt that in a case like this, where we're granting in addition to normal circumstances, that you'd be better qualified by saying that person has got to be of age 50 at least to start drawing that benefit. Now, that is a step away from saying put the two times together and use that for satisfying the 20 years. Step A says you can't. If you don't do that, then what about step B that says, well, you won't do that, but they're already there at age 43 or 45. And step B says don't do it. So that, in our logic, meant that the step A wouldn't be considered either, because that's even a greater consideration than just limiting this.
Okay. And did I understand that 30 years of state service, that's the maximum benefit you could get? That if you work more than 30 years, it doesn't matter.
It does matter.
Well, you can't approve. As far as I'm aware,
you can't approve. Yeah, you can approve.
There's no limit.
There's no limit.
I don't think there's any limit.
In terms, there is.
In the world, I'm talking about first.
Yeah.
You see.
You teach 70 years, which is the last hour.
Good luck.
Well, however, you know, if a guy puts in 40 years, he's at 2% or 2.5%. In the years, he's at 100%. You know, 40 years at 2.5%. 100. Or, you know, I'm pretty sure they limit it to 30 years, but at least they limit them at the minimum. You can work with the state as long as you want. However, the benefit stops accruing after 30 years service, I think.
I didn't know that.
I don't know of any provision like that.
Where do I get that?
Well, you guys
are
looking that up, on
the judicial retirement system has got a maximum of 75% benefit.
Okay.
But I'm not aware of any maximum.
The only thing that entered
in the PERS or the TERS.
or turf was simply that at age 65, the law used to say you had to retire, but that's been challenged.
So there's a possibility of you retiring, depending on the number of years you have, at full salary.
Right. 20 years of your peace officer appointment, 30 years of your elected official or all other type of employees occurs. First 20 years of service.
So at 30 years?
Whole, there's a whole gamut of service that gives you an age retirement other than 50 or 50. Other than early normal retirement.
At 30 years, you can retire with 100% benefit?
Oh, no. No. 60% oh. For TERF and the other, no.
Oh, let me explain this. There's only two benefits. Normal retirement benefit and early retirement benefit. Mm-hmm. Normal retirement is at age 55 to 5 years. Or under the PERS, or it's at age 55 with invested in the teachers. Now, the only thing that a service that the 20 years or 30 years or whatever it defines is that removes the age of 55. It says that once you get 20 years and regardless of what your age is, that times your years of service with no reduction for being less than 55.
That limitation is for police officers and firemen.
Well, they can't put it over 30 years.
Except for the regulation.
What page is that on,
Ken? In your booklet, page 25, number 5, under special provisions for police officers and firemen. I'm pretty sure that's the statute.
It is, but that's only.
So I think for regular employees
This is a board regulation, and I think the answer to that is peace officer and fireman at 2.5%, so 30 years would be
70%.
Well,
70%.
Well, they get there.
Well,
2% for the first 10 years.
75%.
Isn't it 2% for the first 10 years?
After 20 years, you get to run it for 4%. 2.5%. First 10 is 2, the second 10
so
is
that's
20,
and 20 is 10 to 2 and a half is
50. So that means 20 times 2.5 is 50 plus 70. So I think that was probably something like the judicial, which is 75.
And
so 20 years
before 50. I got everybody off the track, I'm not sure.
And I might even go on to add, I think probably the other reason that is that the idea of having 2.5% benefit peace officers is that it's recognized that their employment period is logic is that their employment period is usually something around 20 years. If you got somebody who goes longer than that, then you're defeating the idea of paying them 0.5% more with the understanding that they won't work as long. That's what it's about.
Question?
What is this?
I would have said there wasn't even that one.
Are there any amendments or qualifications to this bill that anyone is?
I find to think that the fiscal note might be a little higher than calculated here, only because I momentarily envisioned a few more people becoming interested in this. You know, a 20-year teacher could go into public employment and participate, and to some extent that would be compatible.
That's low with that.
I'm just guessing that it could turn out to be a little more expensive for us to support it. Fund. But I would call the fiscal note then moderately minimal, some combination like that.
Based on the statistical data we had, we calculated the cost of the two systems, they actually did. And this number, I don't remember exactly, but it was less than the 0.01, 0.02 number. So If anything, we've already rounded up to consider that. If there are a greater number determined, obviously it's going to move the percent up, but there is some, quote, pad by definition in that number. Because we don't go any lower than 1/1000 or 2/1000. So, which is a 0.01%, 0.2%.
In looking at the fiscal note, the University of Alaska is the main one impacted by this. Those teachers. What is? I'm on the attachment page. I guess I don't understand what University of Alaska is. That's what they'd have to. Oh, I see what it is. That's what they'd have to contribute.
Right. See, the University of Alaska as an employer makes that contribution.
Okay. So I guess I haven't made that distinction. That they're separate.
So what you really have is that when you split this up, this employer cost is 2%. The University of Alaska Department of Education are considered state, so in order to the total of $4,930, I have to put in their budget so they could turn around and give it back to the per assistant.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The state match is the state contribution that would have to be paid for all employers. And so, since you match all employers, that's a state fund. Comes from the state fund, so that's where the 21,400. Those two added together is really the two state cost. It is a little confusing.
Okay, on the two pages of the fiscal notes, you add those, the total state cost is the addition of those together.
Correct.
Between $15,000 and $60,000.
Correct.
That, we call that moderate then, not the minimal?
Drop on a bucket.
Probably 8 Cadillacs.
I don't find it looks like 8 Cadillacs.
Question?
Is this whether or not they expect to endorse this?
All right, we're ready for the question. And the question on House Bill 284. Can be do pass, do not pass, or no recommendation. And so we'll vote at this time. And Jerry?
No recommendation.
Do pass. And perhaps we can add maybe three local reasons why.
Mike?
Do pass.
No?
Do pass.
Paul?
Pass.
And the chairman will vote to do pass. We'll should have done it before, but we'll vote on whether to accept or not the fiscal note. And we probably need a motion for that.
I move that we accept the fiscal attachment.
Any objections to that? Hearing no objection, it's unanimous. Unanimously accepted.
Did you want some comment? along there, particularly one which might reference your action on House Bill 634.
On a part-time basis. And I go to the other lady, the phrase there that's kind of concerning me. And I'm assuming that this, what does it refer back to? I'm talking about 15 years. This is the definition, isn't it? It's the definition of a member of the CRS. And I'm a member of CRS can be any full-time or part-time teacher, nurse, principal, supervisor, superintendent who works in the public school system of the state.
Things that are wrong. I haven't changed it, not that we're against, well, I mean, for myself, I'm not against part-time people being covered under the system.
If they work a day, they ought to get whatever the equivalent is of a day's service credit. Now, Rick, we have a bill that we haven't seen. Department of Law has been here twice, but the Congress wasn't here. But that cleanup bill would put some real teeth in this particular section. In other words, you've got certification for teachers, you've also got academic standing for the university. And even though you hold certification, if you have to be a teacher certified and you're doing typing, you shouldn't be under teachers. And if you're signing down to a position requires certification, or a position which has for fulfillment, or a position requires the academic standing. And then any of these professional or administrative personnel that are assigned to this because of the academic standing will receive approval of the minister prior to your performance. And then if they leave the field, they just don't do it, and they'll just appeal that decision to the board, and the board can make a final determination. It seems to me that way, we've eliminated one review, and two, the discretion the university currently exercises for the review. Now, after that point in time, you find this picture in ship and order. Something like part-time service then, if you've got two teachers at the university teaching on a two part-time basis, then I think that should be addressed. I think that's reasonable. Two people teaching at a community college on a part-time basis, then I think it should be addressed. The problem is that it's something that really we're all making. We've overdone by so many non-teaching types in the system among the teachers, that opening up the part-time service for the benefit of the few that should get it, really working for the detriment of the system in total because of all those are hard-earned degrees.
Not
not penalizing employees for taking a job in the other system, not penalizing employees for not being able to employ and promoting employees because he's going to lose his retirement credit, which he may be close to vesting or something, or whatever, so he don't want to give that up. But at least it's clearly understood and it's defined, whereas what's happening in the university right now and where the sticker systems are structured creates, because of the
large net fiscal impact. He said they were accountable now. But in other words, it would have the effect sort of shifting people from the PERS to the PRS.
Right now, it wouldn't be any shift because if they were part-time at the university, they couldn't be covered.
No,
what I'm trying to say is that if they were to take a part-time position, and that position, I asked earlier, it's really hard to say what would happen.
In other words, we don't have a good handle on
this. If a person in a part-time position, that could be qualified professional. They'd be opted not to make a professional one, so they make a part-time and put it under the PERS. It is possible that now, since this were to pass, they could say, okay, this is part-time, and we're going to redefine that position, we made a mistake when we hired him in. And, since it was administrative error, they should have been under the professional category, and retroactively make that.